Welcome to the Evolution of Leaders podcast. My name is Darwin Lee, and I am a coach, trainer, and speaker. I'm the founder of the Evolution of Leaders. On this podcast, I'm interested in exploring the traits, habits, or behaviors that set apart elite performers through their stories and in their own words. On this episode, I interview Scott Rutherford, past president and CEO of Scott Builders, recognized as one of the best places to work in the country. Scott isn't the flashy type of personality, but he knows how to build great workplaces and develop them into excellent organizations where people can excel. That's what it's been known for. What's fascinating is that he makes a clear link between strong leadership and developing really positive work cultures. When I first met him, we quickly exchanged ideas about leadership, and I knew he was someone I wanted to interview. I've learned so much from him. Have a listen to Scott's wisdom and enjoy. Hello, everyone. This is Darwin with the Evolution of Leaders show, where I help people and teams grow and improve. My hope after listening to this podcast is that you will learn something about leading, because today's guest is Scott Rutherford, who is past president and CEO of Scott Builders. While he was there, was named one of the best workplaces in Canada to work. He has a keen focus on leadership, workplace culture, organizational structure, and employee ownership. He now provides mentorship and consulting services on leadership, workplace culture, and succession through Robert Scott Limited. It's all about poking the status quo bear. Scott, how are you today?
I'm doing good, Darwin. How are you doing?
Doing very well. We're excited to talk to you here. And so as we start off, I'm wondering if you can, in your own words, just in a minute or so, kind of describe your career in a nutshell.
My career kind of didn't go in a straight line. I went to university to be a teacher, and I majored in ski club instead. So that lasted a year. And I moved on into architectural technology, worked for an architect for 10 years, worked for a developer for 3 or 4 years, then got into construction. And in 1991, I joined Scott Builders.
Very good. And while you were there with Scott Builders, they were recognized as one of Canada's top workplaces. So how much you say a person might be able to create a great workplace culture? How do you maintain it? How do you create it?
First thing I would say is it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
And it's never static effort. In other words, you can lose it. You can make it worse. You can you always have to tend to it. And it's something that companies struggle with a great deal in terms of how they approach things. To me, it's about values and beliefs and casting those in stone, and that allows the entity to become one. And so everybody who joins the entity or joins the company, it becomes really important that they fit. In other words, if you looked at it as a ball of clay, you could say we're going to add clay and the ball should roll smoother and stronger. But at the same time, if you add the wrong bit of clay, you'll have clay flying everywhere. It's not a simple exercise, because you can have people that are equally qualified join a given company, and maybe only one of those actually fit. And so companies, I kind of call it, you have to find the it with each person that you hire to join a company, because if you find their it or the it that makes them successful within your organization, you have a much better chance of them succeeding and staying with. And that doesn't mean that the people that don't fit, that were equally qualified, won't find their fit elsewhere. But each company that has a great culture has to have people that fit. And that's a hard thing.
Ah, those are really good thoughts on workplace culture. And you talk about finding the it within a person. How do you do that? How do you find that it?
People are still trying to figure that out.
Yeah.
We've got tests that we run people on, surveys that we run people on to try and find out whether they fit an organization. We put organization through tests and surveys to try and find little nuances or things that would say to us, this person that we're bringing into this company is going to fit. And I'm not totally sure the science is totally completed on that. I'm sure you'll find lots of people who think it is. But I think that's one of the hardest parts, and one of the parts that companies really have to work at. And once that person joins your company, you've got to do a damn good job of onboarding. And it's not just about checking in to say, how are you doing? Because each person, when they join a new organization, when they're challenged and asked the question, how are you doing? They nod, yes, I'm doing good. Just like they will nod when somebody says, can you do this? It's in our human nature to, you know, not to look like we can't do something, right? So onboarding becomes really, really important. All too often, employees don't understand. And I can speak from past experience. I had a past employee say to me at one point in time, it took me 3 years to figure out who we were. Well, that shouldn't happen, right? That meant our onboarding at that time wasn't that great, right? And at the same time, when that employee comes in, they're often trying to prove to you that you hired the right person. So they're almost trying to do more than they should. And you have to remind them, no, we trust ourselves. We hired the right person. You just need to settle in and learn about us, and we'll learn about you.
So when someone comes in, you're going through the onboarding process and you're introducing them to the culture and their role. With the experience that you have now, what are two or three things that might be key things in your view that are representative of a successful onboarding?
Well, in hindsight now, when I think back at it, onboarding is not a monthly thing or done in a month. It's not done in 6 months. It probably takes a year. And it's probably done by two people, a person that is providing leadership to allow this person to feel comfortable and grow, and another person to assist and make sure that the support's there in terms of systems and processes. Because each company, no matter what it is, whether it's construction or whatever, we all have a certain nuances that we believe are the end all and be all of who we are. But if we don't spend the time getting the individual comfortable with that, then they're going to struggle. They struggle. The longer they struggle, the less likely they are to succeed in that environment. Yet they may go to another place and just fit in just as neat and tidy as possible.
Do you think there are certain key habits for someone who's been, whom you can see is going to be successful, or you feel having achieved a certain degree of excellence for sure in your field? Some key habits that a person that are, you know, compose a successful person?
I tie that back to leadership. I try to look for, in the past, I've always tried to look for leaders. And some people don't know their leaders to start with. That's almost the responsibility of other leaders to find leaders. And I firmly believe that leaders have to be throughout the company. So arguably you could say in construction, well, let me step back a bit. Leadership's about growing people, about being a gardener, right? And every plant's different, right? So you can't treat everybody the same on the premise, well, that's equal. Each person needs different things to make them successful. And leaders recognize that. And so when I say leadership at all levels, one would argue whether it was in a manufacturing plant or on a construction site, if you have a leader who's foreman and they're training somebody new, they're comfortable with the fact that that person may grow past them, may learn more, may actually even end up being the president of the company one day. And that's what leadership's about. That's one of the key things is we're okay seeing others grow up around us, move past us. We actually take pride, or leaders take pride in seeing somebody even achieve more successes than they ever did. But they had a part in it, right? And leadership's about empathy and humility and all those things that, you know, in the past we looked at those things in the 80s probably and said, well, those are weaknesses if you show too much emotion or whatever. But the reality is those are powerful tools in the leader's toolbox.
Previously, when we talked, you know, offline, I'd asked you about the greatest traits of a leader, and you gave me a couple answers that were very interesting. And I'm wondering if you can develop those and explain those. The first was humility, and the second was empathy. And it seems to me that you really felt those were key traits for someone who's successful in leadership. I'm wondering if you can just talk about that a little bit.
You know, arguably you could say what we see going on with COVID and how our politicians and some of our leaders are reacting to it. It's a stressful time, right?
It is.
But if we don't acknowledge what others are going through, we're almost ignoring what others are going through. And I believe humility and empathy are really important tools in the toolbox. They're not the only ones, but they're really important tools because it allows you to speak to everybody as an equal. Leadership's not about somebody who's on a high pedestal looking down on everybody. Leadership's about somebody, a leader can talk to anybody at any time and that individual feel comfortable. It's like people talk about when there's failure or when there's a problem to solve, the leader steps up and owns it. He owns the solution. He owns the challenge that lies ahead, and he owns the screw up because ultimately he or she gave too much rope or whatever to cause what they're dealing with. At the same time, when there's success within an organization, no matter what kind of organization is, it's the leader who should step back and let others receive the due for the success. Because without them, it wouldn't have happened. And the leader's comfortable in that. And that's kind of the humility and empathy that I talk about. Because once people see that you're comfortable stepping back and letting them stand in the sunlight for something that they've done. We've all worked for people that have to say, I did that, when there's a group of people behind them that know they did it. But think of the power it is when that person steps back and says, these people are the ones that are responsible for this success. And think of the power, too, when somebody steps in front of his team and says, no, I got this. I'm responsible for this. I'm taking the heat for this. You guys have done what you needed to do. We're here. I'm taking the heat for the screw up. And there's little things like that. But when you're in an environment like that, and we've all worked in environments where that's not the case, where it's been finger pointing, where it's been all these kind of things, or we've worked for somebody who has to know everything at the expense of everybody else. So you can see the nuances of when you have great leadership, you can see people growing within that. And you learn by your bosses. I'm a firm believer that, if you stay in one place long enough, you'll probably, if it's a poor environment, you'll probably accept that environment and just continue on what was done to you. I've often used the analogy of the movie The Christmas Carol. And what was it, Cratchit that worked for Scrooge, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And Cratchit could have been an employee owner. He could have whatever. But the environment and the culture he worked on was terrible. So he didn't work in a great place. But he may have worked there all his life. And arguably, at a given point in time, I still think that if he was treated that way, he'd end up treating others that way underneath, or he'd move on. And probably some people disagree with me on that, but I think it's really important that we all think of things that, well, we'd change, we'd do that differently when we were in that position.
Yeah.
But a lot of us have a problem doing that because the status quo is comfortable.
And we've touched on a couple concepts here, leadership and culture in various ways. And the other phrase, word that means a lot to you is succession. So what does successful succession look like, or how do you plan for it?
I think some organizations are better than others. I think that we don't often start thinking about succession from an ownership standpoint as early as we should. I remember attending a seminar where somebody had turned 55. He just inherited the company from his father. So, how long his father had been there. And when we talked about succession, he said, I'm not really worried about that right now. There's lots of time for that. In another situation where I met with five owners and they wanted to talk about employee ownership, and I said, well, that means everybody here has to step up and say, okay, we're going to make part of our company available to our staff. And one of the comments that I got back is, well, I just became an owner at 40. Why do I want to give it up? And I think succession, whether it's with ownership or whether it's just succession on its own, it has to start really early. You have to start thinking about it. And when I say you have to, I'm thinking the individual, he or she, who's in their 40s, running a company very successfully, and that's the last thing from their mind, it should be on their mind. And the reason for that is as you get older in life, you're less likely to want to take risks. You're less likely to push the envelope of the box you're in, right? You're less likely to stretch. And so if you're fostering an environment where you're growing succession at very early stages of a person's life, like in their 30s or whatever, I think you're creating a stronger succession plan when the time comes for you to exit. And obviously, if you're preparing for it when you're younger, then when the time comes, you're leaving on your terms, not because people are telling you to leave, or because you need to leave, or because something's happened and you're going. So succession is about planning well enough so that you can leave on your terms and not worry as to the extent as who's going to replace me. I never thought about this. This come up suddenly, all these kind of comments that come out. My focus is you can't have great succession without a great workplace, and you can't have a great workplace or succession without great leadership throughout the company. And so that's why I kind of chose those three things as the most important things. And out of that comes a lot of other things, diversity, equality, but it's what leadership sets the table for all these things to happen.
What the role of failure on your life and career and how you might have grown for that. What's kind of been the role of failure and getting over that as you've gone forward as a leader yourself?
I don't think you ever get over failure, but you understand it better. You understand that things you do have a direct impact on those you work with and others within the organization. Oftentimes, because you care so much, failure can really be devastating. But, you know, I don't think that there's individuals out there that are successful in this world that can say, well, I've never failed. People fail a lot.
Yeah.
And they're learning experiences that you have to kind of go through. What's even harder is watching others fail that are under your watch, because that's your baby, right?
Yeah,
you've set the table or let out too much rope and you've watched them fail. And then you have to look at it and say, okay, well, I've invested this in them, and this is part of the learning process. And are they better for it? Yeah, most people are. If they're not better for it, then you've got to ask yourself, why are they there? We've all had hires that where the it wasn't identified.
Yeah, okay.
And I'll put that as bluntly, and you think, how did I miss that? And so you're a little more conscious of it. One of the things that I had run into is we would start an expansion into Ontario, and I think we were down there for 5 years or so, and in the end, we decided to pull out. It wasn't because we weren't getting work. It's just we weren't getting the traction that we thought we would. When I look in hindsight, I think I should have done things differently in terms of taking our culture down there. I think there's any number of things that I feel that we could improve upon if I was to do it again. There are kicks in the pants. Failure is not fun. But at the same time, you have to be able to say, okay, I'm going to get over this. I'm going to step up and we'll do it right the next time. And we're a heck of a lot smarter the next time, which is sad in a way, because it'd be nice if it happened all at once. But leadership's about being able to look at failure and say, okay, what's the opportunities that have presented itself out of this? What do we learn? How can we get better? All those kind of things. And then part of it's looking in the mirror and saying, okay, this is on me. What do we do? What do we do differently?
Yeah, this is really good. On the flip side then, what's the best advice you ever received?
Do what you say you're going to do.
That's wise.
Sometimes that's hard to do, but
yes,
that's one of the things I think that's really important. And if things change, you can say, okay, they're changing because of this, but you promise you do what you say you're going to do.
How about when you're leading people, how do you build up people, or when you're considering someone for promotion and going through that process, what are some of the things you look for, you know, for those that might be listening or viewing and they're looking to get promoted, or maybe they're new in their role or they've been in their role for a long time, but wanting to advance? What's some advice you might give that looking from your vantage point of what might be, you know, you'd see as being good markers?
I think organizations and entities as a whole tend to promote on performance. So if I was a great project manager or a great bricklayer. I could be the best bricklayer in the world, right? But if I can't manage people, I'm not going to be successful at my next job, right? So there's more to it than just promoting a person because they're a star at what they do. Sometimes they're a star at what they do, and that's their Achilles heel when it comes to leading other people. I think you have to be really conscious of setting the table early to allow people to understand the nuances of people, in addition to being a great salesperson or the best lead hand at whatever. There's more to it than that. And I think it's up to leaders that are involved in the company to ensure that that person, he or she, has an opportunity and is exposed to what the people side of this business is. When it comes right down to it, it doesn't matter what we do. It doesn't matter what widgets we make or what products we provide or the services we provide. If we don't have the right people and the right culture, it's pretty hard to deliver what we promise.
Wow, that's really good. And so it leads into another thought, which is about, you know, building people up and coaching and mentoring. And I'm wondering how you might view the role of coaching and mentorship and what you're focusing your career on now.
Well, I'm not a coach, right? Mm-hmm. And I'd argue coaching is a little bit different than mentorship. I think mentorship's a little bit more of a longer term growth approach to a person's individual growth. Okay. Whereas coaching may be specific things to improve a delivery method, or they're slightly different, and I'd probably have a coach giving you a totally different definition than I am. And that's okay too. I look at it, to me, mentorship is about the long haul, asking questions, challenging thought process, but not telling anybody what to do. It's more about getting them to think differently. If I could put it this way, we all live in a box in a way. We've created this environment for ourselves. But if we don't elbow the sides of the box shrinks. In other words, we actually have the capability to do less because we've gotten so comfortable. The box has just shrunk around us. And to use an example would be, I'm an architecture technologist and I'm damn good at stair details. I'm so good at stair details, that's all they give me to do. To the point that the only details I can do in a building are stair details. So my box has shrunk right away. And if you looked at it the other way, we should be encouraging people to elbow the sides of the box and recognize their full potential. And that means sometimes, if I can use a movie analogy from Raiders of the Lost Ark or whatever, The Last Crusade, sometimes it takes a leap of faith. To believe in yourself, to at least try. The worst thing that can happen is you fail. But if you don't try, you'll always second guess yourself to say, I should have done that. And so I sort of quantify it as a leap of faith in yourself. And we go back, failure will happen. And you'll land on your own two feet and you'll start again.
The way I met you was that we were both mentors kind of on the same panel and getting matched to mentees. And there's something interesting in the bio that was written for you. And this is what it says. He will work with his protege to ensure that they find a new way of thinking while still being reinforced in what they are already doing. And so it seems like you're maintaining the foundation that they have, but finding a new kind of paradigm in the way that they think.
Well, that comes back to the box now.
Yeah, it does. It does.
Right? You have to think outside the box a bit. You have to force yourself. When you think about the day you decided, well, I'm going to do podcasts, that was a bit of a leap of faith. You didn't know whether it was going to work out for you or not, but you took a chance. Mm-hmm. So what's the worst case? Worst thing is I interview Scott and it all falls apart, right? But on the other side of the coin is you've probably learned a lot by all the interviews that you've done. You've had interactions with people you never know you'd meet, all because you elbowed the sides of your box.
You're very insightful. And so let's say then you're mentoring someone and they're stuck in the box. How might you coax them out to think in a different way? What's the secret sauce of that? That's not easy.
I don't think there's a secret sauce as much as you can open doors, but it's up to the individual to walk through.
Okay.
You can't pull them kicking and screaming through, but yet you have to clean the windows or the glasses. Another movie analogy, if you can forgive me for that.
Love it.
Kind of My Cousin Vinny moments.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Where he's in the courtroom and now he's starting to go through the witnesses, and not everybody saw what they thought they saw. And so you have to create clarity. You have to clean the windows. You have to remove the leaves from the trees so people have an opportunity to say, oh, I could walk through that door. You know, you think of women and some of the issues they have getting a foothold into places they should already be in. And it's up to leaders to make sure that those doors are open so that they can walk through, that they can feel comfortable and equal in management role or running a company. But it's up to leaders to make that happen. Men will often tell you what a woman has to do to become a manager. And I would argue, the woman is already doing what she needs to do to become a manager. It's the men who have to wake up to the fact that she's probably better at it than they are and open the door.
That's a very interesting thought. It's a self-awareness piece there.
It all comes back to leadership, because when you think about it, at the start, when we started talking about leadership, is about being comfortable seeing those around you grow past you, even take a bigger role than what you have, and be very comfortable with that. Because you're, as a leader, your responsibility is to make those people around you, as Julian would say, better at what they do. And in doing so, you create other leaders. And they will do the same thing. And they will grow people. And they will grow individuals that will succeed them and do even a better job.
Is this what you mean by poking the status quo bear?
If I go back to my box analogy, I would say that if you don't poke the sides of the box, things won't change.
Yeah.
Humans by nature are really comfortable with the status quo. We defer to the status quo. We've always done it one way. We'll continue to do one way, whether it's in management, it's service, systems, processes, whatever. And the idea about poking the status quo bear is to get people to actually think about things differently. Take a little bit of a different view of it. We often try and convince people of our view and tell them what we need to think, but we communicate it in a way that is more about us than how they're even receiving the message. So it's, so poking the status quo bear is saying the status quo is never good enough. If I can go on a little side channel here, if we had a canoe race and we were all racing canoes down a length of water, and somebody, or let's say we started out with dugouts, that's even better, and somebody said, well, let's make a canoe, and say that conversation happened in 5 of the 10 canoes, only 1 or 2 of the canoes dugouts would make a canoe. The others would say, well, we're going pretty fast, we're doing pretty good, why would we want to change? We don't have to change. And Blockbuster had that attitude, right? They always thought you're going to put something in a machine. And you'd always put something in a machine. So we're in these boats and we're going on, and some people are thinking, oh, well, our dugout is the best dugout around. And yet we look over and now somebody has built a canoe. And they're moving faster. And so some of us will look at it and say, well, we better do a canoe now. And others will say, well, we'll have to get rid of some rowers so we're lighter so this dugout moves faster. Right, you can see these discussions happening within businesses. And the strange part about it is if you're not poking the status quo bear all the time, or the status quo, those people that now have created canoes, when somebody steps up and says, well, we should square the back of this canoe off and put a motor on it, you're going to have people in the same canoe who thought the dugout to canoe idea was really good, but now they've gotten a little older, they're a little less receptive to risk, and they say, no, our canoe's going pretty good here. Why would we want to put a motor on it? Or the move from the dugout to the canoe was so hard, we don't want to go through that again. But there will be leaders, and you can think about this in every industry that you're aware of, there will always be leaders at the front who are always willing to challenge themselves about what they could do better. And so that dugout to canoe to motorized, whatever, will continue because they're making sure everybody in the boat is always thinking about making sure that the status quo isn't acceptable. So there's your boat analogy.
And I really enjoyed that. And it seems like you have a leadership lens with when you observe the movies and the world around you, which is excellent. I was wondering if you could tell us more about Robert Scott Limited and what you're doing now with mentorship and consulting services and leadership.
Well, I've been away from Scott Builders for a year and a half now. The first year was sort of wind down. And this January, I decided, well, where can I help? Where do I enjoy talking about? And the stuff we're talking about today are the things that I love talking about. So just in time for COVID, I started a new entity. So, but right now, what I do is I mentor individuals.
Yeah.
And I'll continue to do that and organizations as well and try and help them just with thought process and having a different view on things. And it's something, as you can tell, I love to talk about.
Yeah.
And I enjoy the challenges that it brings because there's something new every day that I haven't heard of. So you continue to learn based on just these interactions that you have. That's the premise. And it comes back to poking the status quo, because if we don't do that, things won't change. You know, if whether you liked Henry Ford or not, the fact that he didn't just stick with the Model T, that he thought he needed another model that went faster and smoother, that's what makes change in the world. And if you think about it, as if he had said, well, the Model T is the end all and be all, we wouldn't be talking about Ford Motor Company today. It wouldn't exist.
Love the analogies and love the way you look at leadership around the world. Scott, this has been such a pleasure. We wish you all the best in your journey with Robert Scott Limited and poking the status quo bear in the future.
I really appreciate the opportunity to chat with you. I enjoyed it.
Thank you all so much for listening. If you want to learn more about this topic or others, go to my website, evolutionofleaders.com. Make sure you get 1% better today and tune in again on a future episode of The Evolution of Leaders. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed this interview. Scott really accepted the missteps and failures in his career and learned from them. Some were costly, expanding across the country and just being so open and taking lessons from that. Really appreciated that. I love how he described the role of mentoring and coaching as kind of a leap of faith, which opens new doors. When he talked to me about the podcast, it felt like he was looking right into my soul and saw kind of the journey that the podcast had taken me. It was so wise. I was so impressed when he mentioned that. And he talks about Julian Barling as a professor at the Smith School of Business who focuses and speaks on leadership. He's easy to Google, a great speaker. One of the non-secret secrets that you encounter about management and further into leadership when you read about it is that promoting based on past performance means that a person will become a good boss. And it's often just not the case. It's a different skill set. And it was great to hear how he put so much focusing on managing and growing people to get them there. Scott himself is a great coach and mentor, and you can reach out to him on LinkedIn. And it's also in the show notes wherever you're listening to this episode. And I loved his phrase, poking the status quo bear. So awesome. To get us out of our ruts, coaching develops kind of a self-awareness that can help you greatly and really improve your effectiveness. Many studies have shown the efficacy of coaching, how effective it is. I am a leadership and career coach. Go to my website, evolutionofleaders.com, and connect with me if you'd like to touch base. I would love to hear from you. Please like and share if you enjoyed this. Thank you so much.